Welcome to the Modern Enterprise Podcast. This is a podcast tailored for enterprise IT leaders and decision makers wanting to transform their organization into a more modern and agile enterprise where software drives the innovation. This podcast is hosted by Krish Subramanian, founder and chief research analyst of Risha.Research, a research firm focused on modern IT stacks and artificial intelligence. In this podcast, we will talk about the trends reshaping the IT landscape that falls in line with the modern enterprise framework, advocated by Risha.Research. For more information on our research, please visit www.risha.com. You can read our research articles at www.stacksense.io. We are reinventing industry research for the data-driven world by opening up our data and research process through GitHub. We encourage you to join us in our research by starting our repos or doing a pull request whenever appropriate. This will get your voices heard in our research process. You can find out repos at www.github.com/stacksense.io. You can also watch our videos and webinar recordings at www.risha.tv. Please subscribe to this podcast at anchor.fm/modern enterprise. Let us now move on to today's show.
Okay, we are on the next episode of Modern Enterprise Podcast. This week, we are going to talk about artificial intelligence in enterprise. AI is all rage these days, so I thought I will bring one of the analysts who focuses on AI to talk about what is happening in this field of AI and where it is headed and how it is going to impact the enterprise customers and stuff like that. I have with me Sam Charrington. Sam is a very good friend of mine. Like, we have been working closely together for the past several years, and he had helped me greatly to organize some of the conferences I have organized in the past. So Sam, can you introduce yourself, talk about your work, and also can you talk briefly about how you got interested in AI and how you ended up doing that podcast?
Absolutely, absolutely. So my firm, my analyst firm, is called Cloud Pulse Strategies. I started it about 6 years ago, and I started it coming out of a stint as the head of product management and marketing for a software company that was super early on in the cloud slash big data space.
I think that's when we first met, right?
It is.
And you briefed me first, and that's when you met first. And
then, that's right. That's right.
Yeah.
Yep, that's totally right. So coming out of that, I started Cloud Pulse. And you know, one of the things that has really guided me as an organizing principle for Cloud Pulse and for my research is this idea of intelligent applications. Like, I saw applications getting smarter and needing to get smarter to take advantage of all of the data that's become available and even, you know, was available then. I think about, you know, the types of technologies that are required to support this new age of intelligent applications. And that really led me to a focus on, you know, cloud technologies, particularly application platform technologies that we've spent a lot of time covering together, big data technologies, as well as the analytics and AI technologies that, in a lot of ways, I think of them as almost like paths for, you know, intelligence, paths for analytics. That's at least where I started. Obviously, now there's a ton of activity, so it's not just the platform-oriented companies, but there are companies that are doing very specific vertical slices within the realm of AI, and I'm sure we'll get to all that. But you know, this general notion of, you know, we're all drowning in data, applications need to get smarter, you know, what are the technologies that are required to do that has been kind of the guiding star for, you know, my research interests for the past 6 years.
Okay. So why did you start the podcast? Probably this is the time for you to introduce to modern enterprise listeners about your podcast. And for those who regularly visit the SoundCloud page of Modern Enterprise, Sam's podcast is the only podcast I have been following. So it will be easy for you to find out from Modern Enterprise podcast page. So Sam, can you also talk about your podcast and tell the listeners why it is interesting?
Absolutely, absolutely. So about a year ago, in fact, we just celebrated the 1 year anniversary of the podcast. I started a podcast called This Week in Machine Learning and AI. And the general idea behind the podcast when I started it was I was tracking so much news and developments and, you know, research, new research in the AI space. I'd end up with, you know, I'd end the week with, you know, hundreds of open tabs and, you know, just I'd start the week fresh, right? With 100, you know, and collect 100 more open tabs. And I just really wasn't able to keep up. And so I thought, you know, how can I keep up? Yeah, I had two thoughts really. A, how can I force myself to keep up? But also, you know, if I'm having this problem, then other people are having this problem. And so that was really the genesis for the idea for the podcast. And I started out doing a weekly news roundup. So I talk about, you know, business news and things that were happening in the AI ecosystem. I'd overview research papers that I came across that were interesting, and talk about projects and open source and stuff like that. It was a lot of fun, but it was also a ton of work. And so I eventually pivoted to what the podcast is today, which is more of an interview oriented show. You can find the podcast on SoundCloud, or you can visit the podcast website. It's twimlai.com, twimlai.com. And we're currently doing something really interesting, and that is a series on industrial AI. So within the realm of enterprise applications of AI, I've kind of divided the world into, you know, what I call AI-enabled business applications and then industrial AI. And the key distinction between the two is in the realm of industrial AI, somewhere underneath there's some physical thing happening. There are products moving around. There are, you know, trucks moving around, there are robots moving around, there are things being manufactured. So wherever there's some physical
IoT kind of scenario.
Exactly. IoT plays a big role here. So whenever there's physical manifestation of a system that we're applying AI to, I call that an industrial AI system. And I've spent the past several months researching this idea of industrial AI, and I'm about to publish a report on it. And in parallel with that, I've been interviewing on the podcast folks that are focused on this. So the first person that I interviewed in the industrial AI series is a guy named Ilya Baranov, who is an engineering manager at a company called ClearPath Robotics. And we talked about how intelligent autonomous robots work and how enterprises are using those for, you know, things like material handling in warehouses and in factories. And then in the last show, I talked with Peter Abiel, who is a research scientist at OpenAI and an assistant professor at Berkeley. And we talked about reinforcement learning, which is a specific algorithm within deep neural networks that has broad applications to not just industrial AI, but in many ways, you know, the notion of general AI. And so I encourage folks who are interested in learning more about my work in this space to visit twimlai.com/industrial AI, and they can find more information about both the research as well as the podcast series.
That's fantastic. I think we will dig a little deeper into the industrial AI or how AI is used in enterprises a little later. Before that, let's set some context and talk about the space of machine learning and artificial intelligence in general. Like, What are the trends you are seeing? Machine learning and AI has been there for quite some time, but now because of the convergence of cloud, big data, and IoT, and so many different technologies, we are really reaping the benefits of the hard work that has been going on for several years now. So can you talk about the trends you are seeing in general in the field of AI, both on the academic side as well as in the industry?
Yep. So I think you hit the nail on the head. When I think of the drivers for the current interest in machine learning and AI, it's I think of three things. I think of data, hardware, and software. On the data side, we've got tons more data. We've got IoT and connected devices spitting out data. We've got huge growth over the past few years in web and mobile traffic, and what folks call digital exhaust, all of the server logs that result in the interactions that traffic generates, as well as social media. On the hardware side, we've got cloud, but we've also got advances in terms of GPUs, the graphic processor units, which have almost serendipitously, found themselves into very broad use in doing AI, particularly for deep learning. Mm-hmm. And on the software side of things, we've got there's tons of open source now, but I also include under software just the algorithms. There's a big driver for the recent interest in AI has come in the form of deep learning. And deep learning is a specific type of algorithm that's based on neural networks. Mm-hmm. Neural networks have been around for, as you mentioned, a very long time. But this, the ability to train them more quickly using GPUs, all of the data that we've got available to train these deep neural networks and advances on the research side have really set the stage for us to, be making great advances in kind of the practical use of them. So over the past few years, we've seen things like there are some standard data sets that folks use to train neural networks to do things like image classification. So we've got both the establishment of those standard data sets, but also, step function increases in performance of neural networks in performing those tasks based on advancements in the way we architect and train these neural networks. Things like speech recognition. Both Microsoft and Google recently announced landmark progress in speech recognition. I think the specifics were, hitting the 95% accuracy, which is pretty much on par with human accuracy for speech recognition. Yeah. And all of these applications are powered by deep learning, by deep neural networks. The general idea behind deep learning is that a neural network is basically an algorithm for taking a bunch of input and using and mathematically transforming that into a set of predictions at the 50,000 foot level. And deep learning is based on deep neural networks, which consist of neural networks that are architected into layers, and the fact that in deep neural networks we've got many of these layers, that's what makes it deep. That's kind of what's been behind a lot of the recent interest in AI, these deep neural networks, at least from that's the things that that these deep neural networks are able to do, like all the things that we experience as consumers, like on our phones, whether you're Apple or Android, right, the Google Photos or the iOS equivalent is able to like tell you you know, group all your photos together by faces, you know, things like that. We're talking to our phones now. The phones can understand what we're saying and take action. All that stuff is powered by deep learning.
Yeah. I think on that front, I also would like to call out computer, the advances in computer vision with Amazon's Go store and also some of the security cameras being able to identify intruders from people in the house and stuff like that. So I think we are in an exciting period of growth as far as deep learning and other associated techniques of artificial intelligence.
Absolutely. I was recently at the NVIDIA GTC conference, GPU technical conference, and they were demonstrating there a whole bunch of applications around surveillance, right? So some places like London have cameras like on every block, right? There are cameras all over the place. And increasingly we're walking around with these cameras in our pockets. And those are, you know, all that data is being, and now I'm not talking necessarily about the cameras in our pockets. I hope that data is not being centrally collected, but the surveillance data that, you know, quote unquote smart cities are putting in place is all being collected, and there are increasingly, you know, sophisticated applications of these, of, you know, this general set of AI and deep learning in particular, to do things like, you know, identifying faces and tracking them, you know, from frame to frame and camera to camera, and being able to query these images for anomalies and things like that. There's a ton of interesting things happening in computer vision, including use cases like that.
Yeah, that brings up to the other side question I was planning to ask you when you talked about the progress in hardware. Isn't NVIDIA really doing an awesome job in taking advantage of the traction that's happening in the field of AI? Like, especially like they were well pushed with their focus on GPU for the gaming industry in the past. Now they are in a position where they could be the leading hardware, at least at the microprocessor level, hardware vendor in the AI field. So what do you think of what NVIDIA is doing in this field? You have been attending their conference and you have been following closely. So probably you can briefly talk about them.
I agree. NVIDIA in general and the CEO, Jensen Huang, have really, you know, it would have been pretty easy for them to miss this, right? I mean, we see that kind of thing happen all the time. And you have, you know, folks like the Innovator's Dilemma, right? Just talking about companies, how they, you know, they are systematically predisposed to missing opportunities like this. But they, to their credit, identified the, you know, things that they were seeing happening in research labs and the eventual importance of that to a more broad audience. And they, you know, were all over it and continue to invest very heavily in, you know, both new products as well as, you know, supporting researchers and things like that. So I agree, they've done a great job in, you know, really seizing an opportunity here.
So let us now shift tracks and talk about the topic of this podcast, that's enterprise. I've been like following the adoption of machine learning and AI in the enterprise, which is like, I would say enterprises are just waking up to the reality that the future is going to be driven by AI and ML. So that is, I'm not deep into doing research like what you have done, but from my vantage point, I've been seeing that it's still like enterprises are waking up. They're trying to scratch the surface. They haven't gone for anything beyond that. So what is your take in terms of traction for AI and machine learning and artificial intelligence in the enterprise segment? And what are the low-hanging fruits enterprises are tackling at this point? Or if I am a CIO thinking about tapping into AI, machine learning or AI, What are the low-hanging fruits I can target? So I would love to hear your perspective on this.
Yep. So it's a really good question, and I think it's really interesting because on the one hand, AI feels really new from an enterprise perspective, and we're certainly early on in a certain type of AI adoption within the enterprise. But at the same time, large enterprises have been doing, you know, to varying degrees of sophistication, you know, machine learning and advanced analytics and statistical analysis for a very long time. Mm-hmm. And so I think, you know, when I think about the, you know, where we are in the life cycle, I think of, I certainly think of it as being early, but I think of it as being early from the perspective of relative to where it will be, right? Like we've been doing this for, enterprises have been taking advantage of some of this technology for quite some time, but in little pockets. And I think we're kind of just beyond, just before a transformation where, you know, every pocket of the enterprise or every corner of the enterprise will be taking advantage of machine learning as part of a routine kind of day-to-day existence. And I think there are a bunch of different ways that that's going to happen. Some of that is going to be, you know, to a large degree, transparent to the folks in the enterprise, right? Like Microsoft Office is, and Google Docs are both putting machine learning and AI capabilities within, you know, something as pedestrian as the Office suite, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, we've got that, but then the enterprise system vendors, like, you know, Salesforce is an app vendor as well as a platform vendor. But, you know, from the perspective of their apps, they're investing a tremendous amount into AI to help make those applications smarter. So I think while I spend a lot of time looking at AI from a platform perspective and how folks can use AI to build smarter applications, I think the enterprise is going to experience AI first by adopting just smarter tools that have AI already built into them.
Okay. Yeah, I think I will agree with that. Even that's the kind of path enterprises took when it came to adopting cloud technology. So I think I fully agree with you that if apps are going to drive AI adoption inside the enterprises, but sooner than later, my focus is also on the platform side. So sooner than later, I think we will see more and more developers building smarter applications using technologies like TensorFlow and others in the market. So that in that sense, like, what are the platforms you think right now are playing to the enterprise need to build smarter applications in the future? For example, TensorFlow is one. Amazon has invested in an open source product. Microsoft has done the same thing. So what are the platforms that are really gaining a lot of attention these days, both in the community as well as in the enterprise, on top of which developers can build applications?
Sure. So one of the things that I did in the context of this industrial AI research was took a step back and looked at just that question. What are the various ways that AI is going to find its way into the enterprise? And one of the byproducts there was what I call the AI solutions landscape. And mm-hmm. that solutions landscape has five categories. The first categories in the context of industrial AI, I call them point solutions. These in an industrial AI context, that might be an industrial robot that already has some intelligence built into it. Mm-hmm. But in the broader enterprise context, that could be a SaaS application or your Microsoft Office that has some intelligence in it. It's mm-hmm. not something, it's not a platform. You're not necessarily building on it. You may be integrating it into your processes and with other systems. but it's relatively self-contained. And, you know, again, the enterprises will be adopting a lot of smart technologies over the upcoming years. The next set of solutions in that landscape are what I call pre-trained models and API services. Mm-hmm. And the idea here is, by way of example, things like Microsoft's cognitive services, IBM Watson, Google's and Amazon's AI APIs, as well as there are pure play companies like Clarify, who has a set of image understanding APIs. These are, generally speaking, APIs that are delivered via the cloud. They already are backed by some pre-trained AI models, and you are you're sending your data for the purposes of inference, meaning you're sending a picture, you're submitting a picture to this API, and you are getting back a set of metadata about that picture based on what the AI service thinks is in it, as an example.
Yeah.
And so these pre-trained models and API services are, you know, not quite as accessible as just using a SaaS. They're focused on specific kind of slices of the world. And if they fit your need, that's great. You can build solutions around them. But you also have to have some degree of sophistication, right? They primarily target developers. Mm-hmm.
Before we talk to the next category, who do you think is leading this particular category? In my opinion, Google has been doing really great job. Especially, I was pretty amazed at the Google Object Detection API and the API they announced during the Google Cloud event on detecting faces and objects and video and stuff like that. So in my opinion, Google is leading the pack of cloud providers here. What is your take here? And we will then go to the other category.
Yeah, I was also super impressed with the stuff that Google is doing around video. Mm-hmm. I think that, you know, what's interesting is that this is an area that is kind of my next area of research to dig into. I've seen, you know, a handful of kind of high level 30,000 foot comparisons of the these different APIs, but I've not seen anything that looks at, you know, beyond just kind of a casual comparison, you know, how do they perform, you know, on a mm-hmm. given sample data set? You know, how are the APIs structured? What's the latency? What's the pricing? Things like that.
Yeah.
I haven't dug into that quite as much as I intend to in short order, but I will say that, you know, in general, there are the large platform providers that are you can think of them as generalists, right? They've got mm-hmm. a set of APIs. They all have their strengths. Like Google is really strong in video now, and they released that before any of the other providers have. All of the providers are kind of, you know, have their own like image object recognition types of systems. So mm-hmm. basically image tagging. IBM Watson has some strengths when it comes to things like natural language processing and sentiment analysis that you can use, mm-hmm. You know, tag social media posts, things like that. But generally, the class of large cloud providers, they tend to be generalists. And then you have folks like Clarify, which is a software company that specializes in image tagging and image object recognition. And there are a bunch of specialists. There are specialists in natural language processing and all these other things that the generalist folks all do. Mm-hmm. And so the general advice that I tend to give is, you know, if you're getting started and you are, you know, trying to understand if these types of APIs will be valuable to you, just, you know, use whatever you already use for cloud and dig into that and get some experience with it. If you run into walls, you know, someplace or places where the APIs aren't meeting your need or they're not performing well, you know, then you've got a set of specialists that you should be looking into to see if they can get you closer to what you need.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Sounds good. So what are the other categories you see in this? Well, let's finish that question. Sorry, I took the discussion in a different direction, but yeah.
Nope, not at all. So point solution, pre-trained models and API services, then development platforms. So development platforms, all of the cloud folks, in addition to having these APIs, also have development platforms where you can go and build machine learning models up on these cloud platforms and train them with your own data, for example, data in an S3 bucket, and then use those models in applications by calling REST APIs typically.
Okay.
Amazon ML, Azure ML, Google Cloud, ML Engine are examples. I've got a client named Banzai that's a sponsor for the Industrial AI Research Series that has a software product in this space that's pretty interesting, can also be deployed for inference onto the cloud. GE Predix plays in this space as well, in addition to having the application platform. They've also got modules that developers can call on to train different models. And then there are open source products like H2O. There are a bunch of products in this space as well.
Mm-hmm.
I distinguish what I call development platforms from the next category, which are development libraries, in that the platforms generally are trying to provide for the full life cycle of developing AI applications. And so what that means is, you've got to build a model, you've got to train that model, evaluate that model, and deploy that model into production. And that's actually a loop. So you continue to iterate around that cycle. The development, what I call development libraries, these are things like TensorFlow. On the computer vision world, OpenCV, Big ML is another example of... Big ML is what would be in the platform space, but Keras and Cafe and Chainer and all of these deep
learning. Even for simple models like scikit-learn and things like that will fall into this category.
Scikit-learn as well would fall into this category. These are all libraries that target developers. They offer a lower level of abstraction than the development platforms tend to do. But as is typically the trade-off, right? You get more flexibility there, but you need more sophistication. They're also not typically concerned with deployment. You have to figure out how you're going to deploy the things that you build separately.
Yeah, the typical IaaS plus versus PaaS conundrum.
What's that?
No, this is like typical of like our early cloud days discussions, like whether to go with IaaS plus two application platforms or go with PaaS. So,
yeah, I think there's a lot of, it's, like all of the stuff we deal with is all, it's all about layers of abstraction, right?
Yeah.
And kind of the degree of completeness of a given category of solution. And it's exactly the same thing here. And there's a category beyond development libraries, and that's the statistical toolkits and packages. And these are things like R and SAS and SPSS. And you can build machine learning models with these things, but they really lend themselves more towards statisticians than developers. And then when you're ready to actually not even deploy, when you're ready to actually productionalize a model, often folks have to re-implement them because you wouldn't want to, either you can't or you wouldn't want to, for scale reasons, use the capabilities of like the R platform to serve a model. So what folks will typically do is, there'll be this Chinese wall between the statisticians or data scientists who kind of create the model. And then they'll kind of throw that over a wall to a development team that has to re-implement the model, often without fully understanding it. Mm-hmm. And so that, just that step, really impedes innovation and the ability to iterate quickly. And so, I think that's why the development platforms and the development libraries have gained in popularity relative to the stats packages, but there are still large communities that love to work in R, for example.
Mm-hmm. So we are seeing large vendors focusing on enterprise markets. Have you come across any startups that are focused on AI in enterprise?
Any startups?
Any interesting startups, I would say, any interesting startups. There are many startups, but any interesting startups which you want to highlight here?
Not even interesting. I think there are tons of interesting startups. I think probably the way to think about it is the way the startups think about it is there's a set of folks that are taking a broad kind of platform-oriented perspective. Banzai, who I mentioned previously, is a good example of that. Mm-hmm. Algorithmia is interesting.
I've been following Algorithmia for a long time. They're pretty interesting, yeah.
Yeah, so they're based up in your neck of the woods, up in Seattle, and they are basically trying to create a marketplace for algorithms, a marketplace for machine learning models, not just one that you can access via the cloud or via specific cloud vendors' offerings, because Microsoft, for example, has as part of Azure ML, like a place where people can post or you can like pull third-party models, but they're doing it across cloud platforms. But you can also run their Algorithmia server in your environment and create almost like an AI pass for your mm-hmm. company. So I think that's pretty interesting at the platform level. Then you have a ton of folks that are doing interesting vertical oriented things. If you think about the various lines of business or departments within an enterprise, they all have machine learning and AI plays. So on the marketing and sales side, there's a lot of activity around how do we do lead scoring, and how do we help salespeople better prepare for sales calls, and how do we determine which of the opportunities are most likely to close? How do we find more that look most like the ones that we already have? There are a ton of companies doing that kind of stuff on the customer service side.
Yeah, I was going to say that help desk could be one area ripe for disruption with the AI.
Absolutely,
you could save a lot of time and save a lot of money with that.
Absolutely, there's a ton of activity in that space. So a company, one of the very first companies that I started following in this AI platform space was a company called Wise.io. They eventually pivoted into customer service from offering a broad platform and were recently acquired by GE Digital. Okay. So Josh Bloom was co-founder of that company. He's been on my podcast. It was a great episode. And I encourage folks to check that one out. He also spoke at the Future of Data Summit that I organized recently at Interop. They were doing some really interesting things with allowing enterprises to basically pull the most boring and tedious 80%. Or whatever the percent is, he might have a different number for it. But this, let's say the most boring and tedious 80% of the responses that a customer service agent does, and give them more time to, to work with customers on the more challenging issues.
That is one angle. The other angle I have come across is when an issue is getting escalated to the engineering side, it sort of collects all the data, both from the log data as well as from their interaction with the first level of customer service agents and stuff like that, and tells the engineering team exactly what they should be looking at, instead of like making them go through the hoops and get to where they have to get finally get to. Like I have seen some cases where I think if my memory serves right, even Microsoft is trying to solve that problem where when it gets escalated to the engineering team, they get what exactly they should be looking at. So AI and machine learning and AI playing a role to solve that problem too.
Right, right.
Yeah. Awesome. So like as you talk to the enterprise vendors as well as enterprise customers regarding machine learning and AI, what are the challenges they will be facing? What are the challenges they are facing if they are already using ML and AI, or if I'm a new CIO wanting to get into this space, what are the challenges I should be expecting as I go about embracing ML and AI in my organization?
Yeah, I think there are a couple of big ones. One is certainly all of this activity is data intensive. And so if you're not already collecting the data, then you're at a huge disadvantage, obviously. It makes it very difficult. One of the things that folks sometimes overlook is the notion that there are third-party data sources that can often, you know, really add to what you're trying to do and the models that you're trying to build. Mm-hmm. That is something that is worth considering. But, you know, if you don't have your enterprise's business data in a way, in a place that lends itself to being exploited, you know, the modern example of this is like a data lake, then you're at a disadvantage because, you know, for every new thing you do, right, you have to kind of recreate the wheel in terms of gaining access to the data. Whereas if the data was all in a standard repository, then you can iterate more quickly because the data is right there. Another challenge that folks run into, and this has been talked about, you know, quite a bit, is the talent shortage. There was a period of time when what folks were advised to look for was kind of this mythical, you know, data scientist that was kind of the job record for that was, you know, a unicorn, right? It's like very hard to find someone that had all the, you know, deep math and deep stats, a PhD in physics, and, you know, could also code like a ninja, mm-hmm. right? It's much like the, you know, when people look for kind of this full stack engineer, but with an even more specific set of skills. I think the role definition has changed a lot over the past few years. Mm-hmm. Now people are starting to really focus on building teams with competencies as opposed to finding the one individual that knows everything. And so in addition to this role of a data scientist, which is come to be more focused on someone who's comfortable with the math and the statistics and knows how to use machine learning models to solve business problems in a particular domain. We're seeing the rise of a role called the machine learning engineer. And that's a person that would work with a data scientist and knows how to, pull the data together, use platforms like TensorFlow and scikit-learn in the Python ecosystem and other things to create solutions create solutions that implement what the data scientist comes up with. Mm-hmm. And then that person, that role, coupled with, you know, traditional developers to kind of scale out solutions, I think this you know, those sets of roles are required and lessen the need for enterprises to find, you know, that one perfect person. And then the other challenge along those lines is, you know, the same thing we ran into with the early move to cloud is, you know, executive support, right? You know, all for open source and, you know, ground up movements and things like that. But executive support is one of the things that has proved itself to be a big determinant between successful and failed AI efforts. And part of that is because we're still, I think, as an industry and a society to some degree, still kind of grappling with our trust for these systems, mm-hmm. right? They are, to varying degrees, opaque in their decision-making. I say to varying degrees because some types of models, like decision trees, you can easily look at the result and they'll tell you the path they produce to get to the result. You know, they're easier to understand and thus trust. But then when you start talking about the deep neural networks, they are very opaque in their decision-making, or they tend to be very opaque in their decision-making. There are techniques that can be used to help us understand how they made decisions. But this, you know, this trust issue, it just requires a different way of thinking, and it helps if there's a strong kind of organizational alignment and mandate and all that stuff. Just like cloud required.
Yeah, I think that was the case with cloud. Right? That was the case with DevOps. I think, I think I agree with you on that. Yeah. So the first challenge you highlighted about data is interesting because that's going to be my next question. One of the things I have been preaching for modern enterprise transformation is like slaying all the silos, like slaying the process silos, slaying the data silos, and bringing it all together for successful transformation. So one approach to slaying the data silos is the data lake approach, which is pretty expensive in a way. But then there are also the multi-cloud scenario that's emerging. So what is the right way to remove the data silos so that enterprises can really take advantage of AI? With the silos, they are not going to maximize their benefits with their AI, move towards AI. So like data lake is one way to go about solving it. The other way I see it is to have a standardized interface between data storage and the application so that it can be deployed in multiple clouds. So there are many ways in which you can remove the data silos, but what is your take on that? Like, how can enterprise solve this data silo issue before they can really take advantage of the of their investment in machine learning and AI?
Yeah, I think for the most part, the first thing that I advise enterprises to do when they're trying to get into this is to start with a business problem and let that business problem drive what data you need, a discovery effort around where that data is, how to integrate it if it's not already integrated. You know, if you've got a data lake, you're going to be at an advantage. But at the same time, you don't want to necessarily just look at what's in your data lake. You want to make sure that you're thinking about external and third-party sources, you know, data that might not be in the data lake, et cetera. So for multiple reasons, it's best to start from the perspective of what's the problem that we're trying to solve here. That will eventually, you know, once you, if you're the CIO that's just getting started, that's the way to do it. Right. When you've done that 2-3 times, you have some successes, you know, then we can start talking about, okay, based on what we've learned across these 3 different successes, what's the platform that we need going forward to accelerate our ability to replicate these successes? And that platform is going to include both the, you know, the development platform and the AI stuff that I talked about, but also a data platform that makes it easier for us to innovate on the enterprise's data. You know, with regard to whether that's a data lake or whether that's a multi-cloud scenario, you know, there are obvious kinds of issues with your data gravity types of issues and the cost of moving data around. And it really reminds me of like in, you know, how these things go in cycles, right? Like in, it was probably like early 2000s, right? There was a whole category of companies focused on EII, enterprise information integration. Like, how do we figure out what are all the data stores in the enterprise? You know, create a repository of metadata around those data stores, and allow applications to access the data via this metadata. And that's kind of the direction that we'd have to go if multi-cloud data, you know, really became a prevalent approach. But I'm a little skeptical of that because of the costs of moving large volumes of data around.
Okay, I think we are almost running out of time. So let me ask you a yes or no question. So I want your answer to be yes or no. Is cloud the first step for enterprises to embrace ML and AI so that they can maximize the benefit, or it's not necessary?
If you're insisting on a yes or no, I'd say yes.
Yeah, right? you could just explain a little bit, but I'm just trying to make it short. Yeah.
Okay, so you know, basically, cloud makes AI so accessible. There's no reason not to do it.
Awesome.
Right. Okay. Particularly if you've already got a relationship with the cloud vendor, you know, that cloud vendor offers, you know, variety of services, you know, the Azure ML stuff is even like drag and drop. I mean, there's no reason not to get started on the cloud.
Yeah, I think I agree with you on that. Like on that note, let us stop this conversation now. We'll come back again and talk more at a later stage. So I'm really looking forward to a report on industrial artificial intelligence. And just for the listeners, probably if you can tell them where they can find your podcast and the report once more, that'll be great. Thanks, Sam, for your time. And it's great to have you on the show.
Absolutely. Yeah, I really enjoyed it. It's awesome talking to another podcaster on the other side of the microphone, so to speak. You can get more information about the podcast at twimlai.com, twimlai.com. And there's specific information about the industrial AI research and podcast series at twimlai.com/industrial AI.
Thanks, Sam. It was great having you.
Thanks, Chris. I enjoyed it.